sabrosura papi que que.
Hello everyone, this is Pam, de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features fearless Latinx and people of color that break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 107 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Dayana Acosta. Dayana is an energetic communicator expert, a powerful speaker, and a dynamic educator who helps nonprofit and mid-sized businesses scale and reach their target audience. Dayana's clients and students say she can turn mundane, geeky topics into something relevant that people can get excited about. Her company, Chase Your Fears, manages the marketing and PR departments of US-based nonprofits and mid-sized businesses. In a world that's divided by our differences, Dayana strives to bring people together to teach tolerance and communication skills that can break barriers and help us better understand one another. She is passionate about women empowerment and works with organizations such as the Southwest Florida Women's Foundation to create initiatives that support education, entrepreneurship, and social justice. Listeners, I love Dayana. You will hear it in our conversation. We were having just cafecito, like it was so fun. I love what she's all about and all the amazing nuggets she shares with us during this interview. We talk about college. We talk about the amazing story of how she met her husband, how she became a mom in less than a month, and how she rose to the top with a super strong mindset. So many amazing things she shared, and one that really comes up throughout her story to me is that it's okay to reinvent yourself. I don't think we really touched on that subject, but I think her life revolves a lot about reinventing yourself and being okay with taking risks and change. So if you're in a space right now where you feel like you're stuck in a life you don't want, it's okay to create a new one. Now, I do want to tell you to create an exit strategy and follow a plan, because one thing that Dayana and I have in common is that we both kind of just made a decision that change was needed and off we went. But that's not for everyone. So get inspiration from this episode, definitely, and determine if you're a planner or a doer and act on it either way. Trigger warning, listeners. Dayana shares a little bit about her eating disorder that she struggled with in the past, and we chat a little bit about it. If you feel like this will trigger you in some way, please skip this episode. Your mental health is way more important than listening to this if you feel like right now you're not in a good mental space to hear this. Y bueno, sin más, I'll leave you with Dayana Acosta.
Sabrosura, papi, que que.
I'm so glad you're here, Dayana. I'm happy that we made it happen and we're like super long distance. You might be the furthest from me that I've interviewed.
Woo! You're international.
Yes,
going across the world.
I know. I interviewed a guy in Italy.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, you're further east.
Yes, definitely. It feels so far, but yeah, I'm currently in Budapest and I'm loving it.
How fun! So, before we get to Budapest, where you are now, so tell us what your background, what's your heritage?
So, I am Colombian. I was born in Colombia, but my grandma is a U.S. citizen, so I kind of had this easy pass into the U.S. And we moved to the U.S. when I was 11. But first, we lived in Puerto Rico. So, lived in Puerto Rico for a while, went to middle school there, and then I moved to Naples, Florida, which is basically the closest thing to home for me. That's kind of where I went to high school and a lot of my college years. Yeah, so Florida girl.
Florida girl. But you were in Colombia until you were 11.
I was. And it was quite of a tricky period because when I was growing up in Colombia, we were in the middle of war. So I have great memories of my culture and my family, but I also have a lot of memories of, you know, violence and things like that. So it's quite a contrast to go from that to where I am now, which is one of the most peaceful countries in the world. And I think I'm definitely very grateful for that. So while I love my Colombian heritage and my language and my culture, I love peace more.
Yes. Well, absolutely. And I mean, it just gives you so much, a much better state of mind.
Yes, absolutely.
But you can go back to Colombia now. The situation is much better, no?
Oh, it is much better. And I definitely go back. I was there 2 years ago because all of my mom's family is in Colombia and my brother's still in Colombia, and then all of my dad's family is in the U.S. I'm kind of like torn across the world.
I know.
But it makes it good because I have a lot of excuses to take vacations.
Absolutely. So how was the transition from Colombia? I mean, you're living in, you know, Spanish-speaking place, then you moved to Puerto Rico, which is still a Spanish-speaking place, but it's very different. I've been to Puerto Rico. I love Puerto Rico. It's one of my favorite places. So, I mean, how was that?
It was honestly, I think it was harder to go from Colombia to Puerto Rico than from Puerto Rico to Naples. And the reason why is because Spanish, I'm from Medellin and we have a very distinct Spanish accent.
Your Colombian accent is my favorite, by the way.
When I moved to Puerto Rico, it was like everybody knew who I was. And it kind of put me in a position where people really tried to bully me and pick on me. It didn't really work out, though, because my mama taught me how to defend myself real well.
Nice.
So it didn't work out. And usually the girls that tried to bully me when I was in middle school ended up being like my best friends after I kind of stood up.
Nice.
But it was such a different culture, and it was shocking to me that within Latin cultures, we could have so much diversity of language, of
food.
But can I tell you like a really embarrassing story that I never forget about?
Please.
I just don't know. It really kind of exemplifies how different Puerto Rico was for me. So, you know, in Medellin, we call insects like un bicho, like an insect.
Yeah.
Child, basically, I was like middle school age, and I go to the beach and I have a bug in me, and I start screaming like "Quítame ese bicho!"
They don't need
in the middle of the beach, and needless to say, I got a lot of stares, and everybody at the beach was laughing hysterically. It was like, "What is wrong with you?"
That's so funny. That happened to me when I went to Puerto Rico. So.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Because in Mexico, we say bicho también.
Yeah.
For like bugs, we call them bichos. And so, yeah, 100%. I get to Puerto Rico, but I was with friends, so they made fun of me for like days. But I'll let you finish. What is a bicho in Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, it's a penis.
Yes.
So that was definitely an insane kind of wake up call for me, because I was so naive and innocent, and I was just not ready to like have the whole beach make fun of me.
Oh, I know. But yes, to piggyback on your comment, I love talking to people from other Latin American countries in Espanol, because like I have friends from Venezuela and we laugh at each other all the time because I say Mexican things, like, I don't know, words, and they're like, what? And I'm like, what do you mean? You don't know what I'm saying, you know?
Like, do we even speak the same language?
Right. Yeah. And so like in Puerto Rico, when I went, the whole bicho thing, and they also say, and if I have Puerto Ricans listening to me, they're like, que grosera, because they say mama bicho.
Yes.
But
yes.
To me, I'm Mexican, so to me, mama bicho means nothing.
Yeah, and exactly.
The whole time when I was there, I was just saying that, and like they had to be like, okay, stop. It's like saying, you know, it's like saying pendejo or something, you know, like a bad word.
Yeah.
Or like something really mean. And I was like, oh, but to me, it doesn't mean anything. So yeah, I mean, it's so fun.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. I just love the diversity of Spanish. I'm having so much fun right now trying to teach my son like Spanish and then all the little different dialects and things like that.
Oh my God, for sure. How awesome. Okay, so, but I would imagine as an 11-year-old, were you 11 when you moved out to Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Yeah, as an 11-year-old, I mean, that must be hard. Because, I mean, now we laugh at it, and now we can face, you know, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm from Colombia, you're from Puerto Rico, like, we understand. But when you're little, like, it's just, like, you're different.
Yeah.
But thankfully, your mom taught you how to defend yourself, which is good.
Yeah, my mom's a strong woman.
Nice. Kudos to strong women. So what made the decision to go to Florida? Because the family's in Florida?
What family? Also, the economy in Puerto Rico was kind of crashing at the time, and we had basically every reason to kind of go to mainland at that point. Economy, family was there, all of my family, my dad's family is in Florida, so it just made a lot of sense.
For sure. And so then you grew up the rest of your life, I guess, in Florida.
Like I've lived in different cities in Florida. I've lived in Orlando for a long time, and I lived in Paris for a couple years after high school, but most of the time in Florida.
Okay. Coming from Puerto Rico to Florida, Florida's pretty brown.
Yeah. Well, actually, it is pretty brown if you're like in Miami
South.
You know, like in that area. Actually, Naples, when I moved there, which was early 2000s, it was really white. Really, 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 really white. And it was a huge culture shock for me to suddenly find myself like, whoa, like everyone is so different, both culturally and like difference in language and things like that. And Naples was tiny. It was such a small town. There was nothing to do. Now it's a city. Now there's things to do. And there's a huge Latin population there.
Now?
Yeah, now. It has changed a lot. But when I first moved there, it was definitely a very tiny town that nobody knew about in Florida.
How funny. And then you happen to land there. So then you decide to go to college, or what's the next move?
So my next move was actually drop out of college.
Okay.
So I graduated high school and I had a scholarship. I was a good student, so I had a scholarship to start school. But my best friend is French Colombian, and she was going to school in Naples with me, but she wouldn't stop talking about Paris, like to the point where it was obnoxious. And she just wouldn't shut up about it. Like, oh my God, we have to go to Paris. You have to come with me. You're going to love it. So I went with her for a vacation that I worked my butt off to save for, because my family does not have money. I saved, I worked like two jobs, and we went on this vacation, and I was supposed to come back at the end of the summer to start school. And I basically came back and told my parents, I'm dropping out of school and I'm moving to Paris.
I see.
Just like that. And okay. My mom was like, estás loca.
Of course.
Like, we're not rich. We can't finance your insanity.
Right.
But if you can make it work, by all means. And of course, if anybody knows me knows that if you give me a challenge, I'm going to find a way to make it happen. Because I am so stubborn. Like, I am stubborn to a fault. I obsessed about it. I made it happen. I found a French family and I got myself a job as an au pair, and I moved to Paris.
So, but you went to Paris before. What happened that made you decide to move to Paris during that trip?
Well, I guess I found a sense of belonging that I had never felt before.
In Paris.
Because I guess I moved from Colombia to Puerto Rico, which is Latin. And then I end up in France and I'm like, wait, I fit in here. This feels like home to me. There's a huge Colombian population in Paris, which certainly helped. And I was speaking Spanish all the time. And it felt like all of the good things that I love about South America and not a lot of the bad things, especially not at that time. Like, it was much safer. And it was just fun. And I was young and I could go to salsa clubs and dance all night. And I was just like, I came from Naples. There was nothing to do.
Right.
Like, I was like, yeah, this is where I need to be.
Wow. How funny. Because when you think Florida, you think like it's like super Latinx, like full of salsa and, you know, Caribbean stuff. But then you moved to Paris for that. That's so fun.
But then I moved to Paris for that. And I definitely got better. I used to dance salsa till like, I don't know, 10 a.m. to the point where my feet would bleed.
Nice. Nice.
So it was a fun period of my life.
So your parents, you move by yourself. You don't know anyone.
I moved by myself. No, well, it happened out of coincidence that at this time, my best friend's parents got divorced and she moved to Paris with her mom. So actually my best friend was there, which was a very cool thing. Because she speaks perfect French. And it was like really nice to have her help me settle in. But I settled in so quickly. French is an easy language to learn. And the culture is not too different from Latin culture. So I felt right at home.
How long were you there?
I was there for almost 2 years.
Okay. And then what happened?
Then I realized like there was nothing I could do besides being an au pair there, because I didn't have like a residency or like Parisian papers. Actually, my friend's cousin proposed marriage to me to try to get me to stay. And I was like, no, I am not getting married. So I went back to Florida. And I was like, okay, go back to school.
What's an au pair?
An au pair is basically when you are like a live-in nanny. It's not really like a full-time job. It's basically you work like 20 hours a week and then you go to school. So I was going to French school, like to study French. And then I lived with this French family and they paid for like my housing and then some like pocket money for me to like, it wasn't really like a salary, but it was just enough to get by. Yeah.
Okay. So then you move back to Florida, and are there any ideas to maybe go to college at this point, or you're like...
Yeah, so I went back to school, actually, and I went back to school. The goal was to do either PA or med school, and I was doing great in school, but I somehow ended up constantly falling into marketing jobs, and me being stubborn, I'm like, no, you know, med school, more secure career, like this is what I need to be doing, you know. And also my brother's a doctor and my dad worked in a pharmaceutical company for like 17 years. So you know where that push was coming from.
For sure.
Yeah. And I had amazing grades in school. Like, and I was like the teacher, my anatomy teacher basically would beg me to keep going. And so everything was kind of reinforcing that, but I just didn't feel happy or fulfilled. So I made the switch and I started taking on marketing jobs. And eventually that led me to me opening my first marketing company. In between that, I also had a fitness boot camp, which was like a tangent thing.
Okay.
So I've had two businesses by now in two different niches. I had a fitness bootcamp when I was 21, and that made me fall in love with marketing even more, because what I liked the most about my business was getting people to my business.
You.
And then I was just like, okay, I feel like marketing is kind of my thing.
And what happened with school?
I graduated. I have a bachelor's in health science, and then everything else in schooling is just like marketing conferences and learning within the marketing field.
Well, and I think I read an article recently that was like, you don't need a college degree anymore.
I don't know. I do. I am so grateful for my education.
I agree.
Taught me to think in a different way.
Yes.
I don't think I would be as successful as I am had I not gone to college, even if it has nothing to do with what I actually do for a living. So I don't know. I love school. I'm a really huge nerd. And I have found that a lot of the things that I like the science-y, the research parts that I kind of gather from my degree are things that I really apply in
yes.
my field of marketing. And they kind of set me apart, because most of the people that are in marketing are just full-on creatives.
Yes.
And they don't really use the analytical part as much. So I feel like I have a really healthy balance of the two. And that's all thanks to my education.
Absolutely. No, I do think that I am a lifelong learner. I always have to have a book that I read. I'm always learning stuff. But I think the premise of the article was more so like the whole idea of you have to go become a doctor. Because, you know, during the Industrial Revolution, that's when the whole thing of you have to have a trade to become a person that of status or whatever. And so then we've carried on this whole idea of we need to have this teacher, doctor, lawyer, you know, whatever. Where now we're living in a time where, absolutely 100% I agree. I love college because it teaches you a ton of stuff, but how many people are working? I'm not using my degree. Yeah.
No. And honestly, the thing is, if you think that what college is going to do for you is that it's going to prepare you for your career, lifelong career, I think you're going into it for the wrong reason.
Yes.
Because I think that what you actually learn in school can become outdated pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did so many business classes in school because I already had that interest. All of my electives, even though it was all in health science, I took my electives in business because that's just
Why
what
not?
I was interested in. And I took marketing classes in college. And I think all of the stuff that I learned, it's now outdated. It's completely useless. So, but I still, learned a lot about putting myself in front of other people and having to do public speaking and having to prepare for certain situations. So it's useful, but not in the way that it used to be, I think.
I agree. And it shouldn't be that expensive.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I feel like student loans, they're a whole other story.
Yes. Well, today, just for the listeners, today's Thursday and I do batch recording on Thursdays. So I record as many interviews as I can on Thursday. So I just did another interview before you and we talked about debt and how we had an idea of, before, way back when, people had credit cards, and people with credit cards way back when, they gave them status. And so we've been carrying on this mentality of if you have a credit, you have status. But now it doesn't matter because everyone has a credit card.
Yes.
The problem now is we have debt.
So much of it.
Oh my gosh. So much
of it. It's something that's definitely going to have to be fixed. I feel like there's going to be a bubble that has to burst there at some point.
Absolutely. Well, and I think we can, as a newer generation, as the people that can, I can try to teach my parents stuff, but they're in their ways,
Yeah.
So, it's our time to kind of take the bull by its horns and just be like, okay, I'm not going to follow those patterns. I'm not going to I went to college because that was what you do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no option.
Yeah.
But okay, I have my degree and I do what I want.
Exactly. And sometimes I feel like the better option is not to go to school. There are certain, if you are a self-motivated learner, if you have very focused creative interests that you want to pursue, I feel like you're better off pursuing those and seeing where that takes you than spending a fortune being taught how to be creative, which in reality, it just pulls your creativity away. I feel like I would have died if I would have studied marketing because they just make you uncreative.
Yes.
Telling you what to do all the time.
Totally. I went to art school, so my degree's in art. And I remember painting class was one of the hardest classes I've ever taken because it was so broad. It was this is the assignment. And I'm but why? Why can't I just paint what I want to paint? Why are you telling me what to paint? And why, it was hard. So yes, I agree.
And it kind of defeats the purpose of creativity and the point of going to creative school.
Yeah, of allowing your thoughts to just kind of flow. They don't, yes. No, I agree 100%. Okay. Yes. So we can rant about school all day. But so you went, you finished, you start your boot camp company.
Yes.
How does that come about?
It came about, honestly, my life is so complicated. When I was growing up, I had an eating disorder for about 11 years. I struggled with anorexia and bulimia. And part of my treatment was exercising, just learning how to exercise just for actually gaining weight.
Wow.
But I needed to gain muscle because I was severely, severely underweight. And with that, I was also really uncoordinated. And I just struggled with a lot of daily life things. So I started going to the gym and paying for a personal trainer because I needed to get my body in some kind of normal form.
Sink, yeah.
Through that, I fell in love with exercise. And so I decided, oh my God, I want to make people love exercise as much as I love it. And so I went into the fitness industry. This was when I was 21. So a while back, almost 10 years ago. And then I went into it thinking, I'm going to make people love exercise because of the health benefits and everything. But I didn't realize that back then people were not ready for that. People just wanted diets and fast fixes and starvation diets. It was just the culture of skinnier is better.
That was potentially made you, I don't know, but maybe that's what pushed you to have that disorder maybe.
Exactly. So it was kind of I felt like it became really toxic for me because I gravitated towards exercise as a form of healing.
Yes.
And here I was and people were coming to me because they just cared about being skinny. So I just kind of fell out of love with it pretty quickly. And I was but I realized I like marketing still. So that sent me in the right direction somehow.
But I want to commend you for acknowledging the fact that that was toxic for you, because my dad treats people with eating disorders. And I mean, it's not easy. Even going out to eat with friends.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So kudos to you for acknowledging the fact that people are coming to me reminding me about this. And especially when you have a business, being strong enough to say, this is not healthy for me, I'm going to close it down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, and it's also, it's a scary thing to do as well because it's your livelihood. And
yeah.
You're I don't want to do this anymore. I put so much money. I have my own standalone facility. So think of rent and equipment and everything.
Gosh.
But I just got to the point where I was this is just not where I want to be. And I really believe that sometimes when you feel when you think of something this just didn't work out for me, it's always life is just redirecting me. And this may be really uncomfortable right now. And I may be really miserable with the process that I'm going through. But I just know that life is setting me on the right track. And it did. It did. So it's good to look back now and say, okay, I managed to make it out of that. But it was a very scary transition.
I bet. Ooh, this is a good time for a coffee break.
Yeah.
Let's go into a coffee break. Sabrosura pati keke. So, do you drink coffee?
Oh, I love coffee.
Okay. So I'm like, you're from Colombia. Please tell me.
Oh, my God.
I've interviewed Colombians that don't, though.
Oh, I know. My best friend hates coffee. And I just think it's how can you be Colombian and hate coffee?
Right? I know. It's an oxymoron. Is it an oxymoron? I don't know. But anyway, so you do drink coffee.
Oh, I love it.
And now, you're in a place where they drink a really kind of interesting coffee, no?
Yeah. Well, there's a huge coffee culture here.
Yeah.
Coffee here is better than in Colombia.
Hurts to say.
Hurts to say. It really does. But it's amazing. The coffee shops. They're to die for. There's a huge coffee culture here.
Yeah, I bet. What's your favorite way of drinking coffee now?
Cappuccinos.
Today is National Cappuccino Day.
Today's National Cappuccino Day?
I mean, yeah.
What?
National in the U.S., yeah, National Cappuccino Day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I have it every day, so.
Yeah? I think I'm covered. You should be. Do you have a special coffee shop there?
There's so many mom and pop type of coffee shops.
Those are the best.
Yeah. In my own neighborhood, there's probably 7 or 8 of them that are within 5-minute walking distance. Because I live on the city center. So there's always options.
How fun. That's so exciting. So on my end, I am drinking Four Sigmatic. And it's this mushroom coffee. Talking about exotic things. It's really interesting. They're based in LA, so it's not coming from a fun place. But they use mushrooms with coffee. So it's this I get these packets of instant coffee and just it's instant coffee, but it has mushrooms in it. So it gives you much more energy. Yeah. Some people don't like the taste. I love it. I drink a lot of weird things. I mean, I eat and drink a lot of weird things. So a little mushroom drink is not going to make it big deal. But it gives you a ton of energy. I really like it a lot.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yes.
I have never tried coffee with mushrooms. I feel like that's something that I need to try now.
For sure. It's called Four Sigmatic. So the number 4, sigmatic.com.
Sigmatic. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might be able to ship it to you. I'm not sure. But when you get back to Florida, for sure.
When I get back to Florida, for sure.
Or when you, if you ever go to LA, they're based in LA.
Oh my gosh. I feel like so many creative ideas come from that
come
part
from
of
LA.
The country.
You know, California's a magical place. I won't say that. It's
like so many crazy, wild ideas that just probably wouldn't take off anywhere else, but they have the perfect birthplace in California. And I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's the beach, the ocean. Who knows? Mm-hmm. All righty. So let's get back to the show.
All right.
Cool. Where were we in your story? So do you sell your business? Do you decide to close it, the fitness?
I just closed it. I closed it. I didn't even want to deal with selling it.
Oh my gosh. But what do you do with the stuff? I mean, you have a place.
I sold, like I basically paid the fee for canceling the lease.
Oh,
so that was fun.
Shit.
Yeah, that was really fun. And then I sold all the equipment and actually moved to a different city because apparently that wasn't enough change for me.
You know, when you grieve, you need change.
Exactly. So I just moved to Orlando and kind of started over.
And your family's still in Naples?
My family is still, well, they're in Cape Coral, which is about 40 minutes away.
From there?
Mm-hmm.
What do they say?
Oh, God. My parents have always thought I'm crazy. You know, I'm like the crazy, unstable child. Like, I have a brother doctor and an engineer sister. So,
I
can't wait.
Yeah. What number are
in
you?
In the eyes of the parents.
Yeah. Are you the middle child?
I am the middle child.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Of course.
I am like the perfect middle child.
Yes.
Example.
Yes, you are. I'm the oldest. So I always have tú eres el ejemplo. Like you have to, you know, keep it together. I was so annoyed. But my sister, the middle child, she could always get away with everything.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because she's the middle child. That's why I can't point out middle kids all the time.
Yeah, we're just like, my parents are just like, we got two good ones. It's good.
So funny. Okay, yeah. So the parents are like, you're crazy. I mean, it happened. Yeah. You're okay.
Yeah, they were just like, whatever. So they're like, okay, well, are you going to get a real job now? So I got a series of real jobs that made me, and I'm saying quote unquote, and that made me real miserable. But I got a lot of experience from them. I made a lot of connections. And it was through those connections and the knowledge that I gained in those jobs that I was able to then start my business, which is the business that I'm running now. I mean, I kind of rebranded, but it is the same business, same clientele, and it's been a really good journey so far.
That's awesome. So how long did it take from like closing down, move to Orlando? Did you have savings that you used up? And how was that transition?
No, I guess okay. I'm not a planner. I just kind of like made spur of the moment decisions. And I wouldn't recommend it unless you're really good at like dealing with the struggle.
Yeah.
I realized through life that I am really good.
Yeah. You know, some people thrive in that.
Yeah, I apparently do, which is not exciting because it's hard to do that. But I moved to Orlando. We rented my approach to life. And this is, I guess, something talking about wealth that we're going to get into later, I guess. But one of my biggest approaches to life is you don't have to have money, but you cannot ever, ever, ever have a poverty mindset or feel like you are poor. And so for me, the first thing that I did, having no money, was put all of my money into renting a house in a great neighborhood in Orlando. I didn't have money to furnish it. I didn't have money to pay for power. I actually used a camping stove inside my house. So
nice.
That tells you how insane I am. But I lived in a great neighborhood, which means I had great neighbors that had connections. And
that elevated your vibration.
That elevated my vibrations. That nobody knew how broke I was. Nobody cared because I lived in a good area of town and nobody was looking at my lack of furniture and sleeping arrangements. So to me, I was still winning. I was hanging out with people that were better off than I was. And that kept me going. So that was like my step number one to reestablishing my life was move somewhere fancy that I couldn't afford.
I do think that, and it's funny because I feel like I'm rewinding to the conversation that I had before you. It's so funny. But yeah, 100%. Like we have this lack or scarcity mentality a lot. And I talked in the previous call, I talked about how like our money story, you know, to me, my money story, like I've been working on my money story and my money story, I read Overcoming Under Earning. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that my money story began with No Me Alcanza,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything I was doing, it didn't matter how much money I was making, no me alcanzaba.
Exactly.
Because that was what was like in there, right? So absolutely like changing that, not having that mindset, it just does something.
Yeah, it open source for you, and it is a process, but I think it is the most transformative process. It is the reason why through life I've been able to kind of go through periods of transition and do so in a way that always elevates me and gets me somewhere higher. And it's all been about that money mindset.
Yeah.
And I know it's like so talked about now, but it's just so important. I wish us Latin people would actually believe it, because I think we have major problems with it. Everything's scarcity. Everything's about scarcity. And I don't know where that comes from. And it has to change.
Yes. Well, I think it's just generational trauma that we're carrying.
Yeah.
Like if we go back, like way back when we got colonized, you know, like mm-hmm. we have ancestors that were like, their stuff was taken away. So mm-hmm. now we carry that generational trauma of like, we have to get a hold of things. And if we don't have things, then we don't have enough, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%. I think. And one thing that I do want to comment on is like your awareness of knowing that what you needed to do to get to the next step.
Yeah.
You know, like you knew, because I think there's a difference. So you knew that you had to live in this apartment that someone would say fancy apartment. But what I hear is that you did it because living in this place was going to give you access to people.
Exactly.
That was at the next level that you wanted to get to, which I think is so powerful. I mean, it's a strategy.
Yeah. You have to be strategic, especially when you're broke. Then you have to be even more strategic.
Yes.
So it's not about panicking about being broke, because I feel like being, you know, just not having money is such a temporary thing. Like money comes and goes. It's just yes. a transaction. It's not a big deal, but it's what you do with the money that you have, and more so with the actual internal wealth that you carry. Like your knowledge, your wisdom, like the skill sets that you have, like that's the real wealth. And when you know how to capitalize on that and how to be strategic with it, then you're like, no matter how much life beats you down and you go through like really difficult things, you can always bounce back, because you know that that's the real wealth.
Yeah, because your abundance comes from within.
Exactly.
100%. Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, so you move into the fancy place and it's fine. Whatever's inside the house doesn't matter, because you're meeting the people that you need to meet.
Uh-huh.
And then what happens?
So then I basically get back, you know, this was, people still use business cards. That seems so dated. It makes me sound so old. But back then, people still use business cards.
Yeah.
So I got myself business cards saying that I had a marketing company. I didn't have any clients.
Nice.
But I had a lot of knowledge that I knew I could deliver. And I started kind of freelancing. So I started picking up freelancing jobs. I put the last money I had into getting a membership in a members club in an elite place in Orlando. And I got this money actually from a loan, partial loan from my parents, and also from selling all of my fitness equipment and the membership. I don't know, it was like $300 or something. And I was left with like $10 in the bank, and I just didn't care. And in this fancy place, I met a lot of connections that kind of got me some first clients, and I started building my network. And then I also got myself a part-time job to support my business growth. So I started doing personal training at a gym. And yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
Okay. Did you ever deal with imposter syndrome?
I did, and I have. I think it was later on.
Interesting.
Most people say when I got started, I, you know, it was so hard. For me, when I got started, I was really stubborn and I was fired up, and I was like, my parents think I'm a failure. People think I'm a failure, and I just have to prove them wrong. And that rage was like really driving me. Like it was the anger that was keeping me going. And I think at some point the anger ran out, and I was like, oh, wait, like, so what do I do next? So it was years later, when I had actually left Orlando and gotten another real job, that I kind of really was like, okay, I tried this once. I feel like it didn't work out. Now this is never going to work. So it was just like a big 3-4 year process before the imposter syndrome kicked in.
How funny. And how did you deal with it?
I had to just force myself to say, okay, like people act all the time and I'm just acting. You know, like I am just acting until I feel like I'm no longer acting, and this is just my life role. And I don't know what it was, but it just kept me going. I honestly just powered through it, and I acted like I just had it together. And eventually,
fake it till you make it.
I faked it until I made it. Yeah, that's it. nothing deep. It was just, I really had to make it work, because it hadn't worked so many times before that I just, like, I couldn't afford to just give up.
Right. Did you have any mentors or anyone that you kind of like bounce ideas with or kind of like console?
My husband. My husband's like my biggest cheerleader. And I don't think I would ever, I wouldn't even have a business. I wouldn't be living in Europe. I wouldn't have done any of the things I've done in my life if I just didn't have my husband. My husband's the kind of person that just takes the leap and hopes the net will appear somehow. That's just his personality. And just having him around has constantly kept me going, even in the times where I was like, I can't do this. And he would always point out, well, that person over there clearly doesn't have it together and they're doing it. So what makes you any different?
That's awesome. We'll go back to the on how you met him and stuff. But I do want to comment on something that someone told me once when I was doubting myself. Because I was like, well, you know, excuses. And he was like, Trump is not qualified to be the president. But he believed that he's the president so much that he beat someone who could. Or, you know, maybe not Hillary, but anyone else, like all the other people that were running. He believed so much in himself that he made it. So he was like, why are you not believing in yourself?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like one of the biggest curses in life, and you're going to think this is crazy, but I think one of the biggest curses in life is having high intelligence. I think the more intelligent you are, academically speaking, the more self-doubt you're going to have, the more you're going to be obsessed about all the possible outcomes and measuring the risk. And I'm sorry, but stupid people don't do that. And it works beautifully for them.
Yes. So,
just have to say, a lot of times I admire and I really look up to people that just may not be intellectually that intelligent, but they just have so much trust in themselves that it's just like, it just works. It just, it works out. And it's, we should all take a little lesson from them every now and then.
I know. I mean, I always, every time I'm like, I have this little tiny bit of doubt of something, whatever it is, I'm like, okay, but Trump's president, so I can do this.
Exactly. Like, he did it. So can we.
Yeah. Like, come on now. He's president of the U.S. So, okay. So how did you meet your husband?
We met at the gym.
Okay.
Back in that period when I hired a personal trainer to like not be clumsy and be able to like walk up the stairs. We met there.
During that time?
Yeah, during that time. My boyfriend had just broken up with me actually, and I was crying, and I was a total mess, like swollen eyes, looked horrible, like hadn't slept. And he just came up to me and asked me what was going on. What's going on? Are you okay? And I said, no, my boyfriend just broke up with me.
Don't you see me?
How are you even asking me that? And he's like, oh, maybe there's someone better out there.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he worked at the gym at the time, and he worked the night shift. And the reason why he worked the night shift, I didn't know this, but I learned this years later or after we were dating. He was homeless. So he worked the night shift to hide that he was homeless and lived in his car during the day. So I really found myself like, you know, the keeper, according to my parents. And that was really pleasing for them.
Wow.
Yeah. And, but he would stay after work. Like, I will come into the gym at like, you know, 5 a.m. and leave at 7 to go to work. And he would stay to just walk me to my car and ask me how my morning was. And it took him like probably a month to just ask me out for coffee. And yeah, we've been together ever since. And I have to say that marrying a homeless man was the best decision I made in my life. So there
you
go.
Wow. That's such a cool story. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, but he didn't share this with you until like...
He didn't share with me until I was like, do you even have a house? Like, why are you always here? Because what happens is we started dating and he was spending way too much time at my place. And I wasn't ready for it because I, you know, had just gotten out of a relationship and I really wasn't... I didn't want to get serious or anything like that. And so I was like, well, why can't we just hang out at your place? That's kind of weird. And then I realized he was getting mail at his job. So I thought that was also strange. And then one day I was like, are you homeless? Like, I was joking.
Yeah.
And then he didn't respond. And I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, so he basically like took a shower and worked at the gym. So nobody knew and kept his stuff in storage and lived in a car. And Kong got a Panera a lot.
Wow. So, but you know what? I mean, that goes to show also, I mean, that's a powerful story that, I mean, what's your excuse, right?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, and the thing is, the reason why he became homeless was because the economy had crashed and he lost his business. And it actually, I learned everything I know about business from him. And he, during that period, he didn't use that period to dwell on the fact that he was homeless. He used it to educate himself even further. Like all of the time he had, he spent on building new contacts, learning new skills. And I just think that he just showed me that, like, if you can be at that low of a level in your life and you can still get up and do amazing things, then who am I to say that I can't do it?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what a powerful story, because
yeah,
there we see a lot of people, especially in San Diego, which, I mean, there's a lot of mentally ill and stuff, but there's a lot of people that they just choose to not do anything. And
yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's powerful, the fact that he was like, okay, strategy. You know, my strategy is going to be work in a place that allows me to be somewhere for the night. And then just keep things rolling and not really like be like, oh, I lost my business. Oh, my gosh, poor me. You know,
exactly.
Just like, I mean, that's survival.
Yeah. He was poor, but he didn't have like he was financially poor, but he didn't have a poverty mindset. He was never you couldn't tell that he was homeless. He didn't look depressed. Actually, he was in amazing shape. He was ripped. He was like really hot. It just, you know, when you keep yourself up, both physically and mentally, and you work on your, like, your knowledge, your skill set, and you're constantly growing, money comes and goes, and your skills and your body and everything, you're still, like, becoming better at everything that you do. So it doesn't really matter, like, that you go through periods where you may not have that much money. That never affects you in the same way that a person that's like, oh, my God, the world is over because, like, I don't know, like, I don't have enough money this month. And lost a deal, and now I don't know what to do to get back up. Like, if that is your mindset, you are never going to overcome. You're never going to do things with your life. It's always going to be a constant state of life is hard, life is difficult, bad things happen to me. It's just what you tell yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. That made me think of, like, recently I lost a deal. I mean, I said I lost a deal, but like I sent a quote to a client and we were really close. And then she was like, you know what, let's just hold off on it. And so I told a friend and she was like, oh my gosh, what are you gonna? And I'm like, it's fine. I mean, it's fine because that opens a door to another deal. I mean, it's not a big deal. I mean, to me, I'm much more grateful that I'm healthy and that I'm able to serve someone else versus like me being sick and losing all my deals.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And sometimes that person may have not been someone that would have allowed you the space to continue working on your own growth. That's one thing of learning business. Sometimes you take on clients that you shouldn't have and your life becomes so much more difficult. Yes. Even though you have more money in the bank account, there is no point in having that money because you're just a miserable human being. So it's all a process and it's all about how you perceive that process.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I will share. We were really close with this specific client and she, during the last call, she was like, you know what? I've worked with, because I do brand strategy and within the brand strategy, I plug in design stuff because I'm a designer. And so she was like, I'm going to warn you. I've worked with designers before and I have been told that I'm really hard to work with just because I have like this like strong temperament and I know what I want. And in my head, I'm like, okay, universe, this is not going to be good. Like, I really don't want to deal with it. I really don't, because I've worked really hard to work with awesome people. You know, I don't work for someone because I don't want to work with someone that like is crazy. So I was like, all right, universe, I'll trust you. And she ended up saying no. And to me, instead of like me being sad about it, it was a relief because I was like, okay,
yeah,
that was the universe saying no. She's probably not going to work for you.
Exactly. I feel like life takes care of you.
Yes.
Sometimes we just fight back against it.
Yeah. You just have to trust. You just have to trust. Yes. Okay, so now you have your business and you've traveled the world. And how did we get to where we are now?
Honestly, it's because of all of the mindset work we have been discussing. I could give you tons of marketing strategies and how to launch your business. And that would be more in line probably with what I do, which is marketing. But it wouldn't matter. Mm. It would not matter one single bit if you don't get the foundations, which are learning how to actually have your mind work and do the work for you so that you can actually elevate and work in your life. So yeah, it's just mindset, working on my mindset.
That's awesome. You're in Budapest.
Budapest.
And what made you go there?
Well, initially, I came here right before the U.S. elections, the presidential elections in 2016. And I was convinced that Trump was going to win. I just knew
it.
And everybody thought, I just knew it. And everybody thought I was crazy. And so it was right before the elections. We came on vacation because my husband is Hungarian. So we came to see his family. I had also gone to Paris to visit my French family. And we were supposed to be going back. And I think about a week before we went back, my husband and I were walking in a park. And I just told him, I can't go back. Like, I can't go back. I'm not going back.
Because Trump had already won.
No, he hadn't yet, but I just knew that he was going to. And also, I was really unhappy in Florida with the current situation there, because at that point I was still working somewhere else and I was not very happy with my job that I had. So I just didn't want to go back. And my husband was like, are you sure you want to do this? Because we won't have a lot of money to actually stay here. At the best, we can maybe afford like a tiny one bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And in Florida, we were living like in a big house, you know, American comforts and everything. And I was like, fine, I don't care. We can move to a one bedroom apartment in the best neighborhood. What's the best neighborhood here?
Yes.
And so he said, okay, let's look for apartments. And if we find something that you will settle for, that's a one bedroom apartment that I don't think you will settle for, we'll say that we're moving and we'll bring the dogs over because we have two dogs.
Okay.
And so the first place that we saw, I fell in love with. It was a tiny, gorgeous, gorgeous one-bedroom apartment. And I was like, this is what I want. And I rented the apartment, like, a day after saying that I wanted to stay in Hungary. I don't speak a word of Hungarian. It's one of the hardest languages in the world. And we rented the apartment, and we stayed. And my husband went back and brought the dogs back, and we settled in.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. And you're a new parent?
And we are new parents. So about a year after being here, we decided we wanted to adopt. And that was a roller coaster. And then we waited for about a year. And we got a call one day that we had a match. This was actually our second call. We had a failed match before. But we got a second call that we had a match. But we had to move very quickly. And quickly was 14 days.
That's quick.
Yeah, of about 14 days, we packed up. We went to a tiny village in Hungary called Dombóvár to bond with our son, who's not even 2 years old yet. And then we stayed with him for a week in that village and brought him back home. And he hasn't even been home for a month yet.
Oh my gosh.
Same transition, a very beautiful one. It's been the biggest miracle that life has ever given us. And we're so happy.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we're out of time. Otherwise, we could keep talking about this.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all your story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
No, I think it's awesome. And I think, I mean, mindset, it's the number one thing. 100%. I agree.
Yes, exactly.
Totally. So the last two questions I always ask the guests. Do you have a remedio?
Yes, 100%. Everything honey. My family swears by honey on everything.
Okay.
So honey for burns, honey if your throat is hurting, honey for skincare, honey instead of sugar, just honey.
You know, honey, I'm vegan, so honey is one of those like controversial thing. But honey to me is medicine.
Yes.
I went to a restaurant one time and I wanted a dessert, they didn't have a vegan dessert. And so then the chef was like, how do you feel about honey? And I was like, well, if it's going to heal me.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, maybe we can work something out. Honey is pretty magical.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely something my family has sworn by for years. And I think it works like a charm.
I agree. You know what I use honey for when I travel and I feel some type of allergy? I find local raw honey and that helps.
Oh, it helps so much. It's like for me, it was hard moving here. And that's exactly how I got over my allergy.
How funny. That's so awesome. Yeah. And do you have a quote or a mantra that you live by that you want to share with us?
Yeah, you chose this life. So for me, it's really good whenever I am feeling like in a bitchy mood and I want to complain about my life. I say all the decisions that I've made have led me here. I chose this life. And also I can choose how I perceive the current situation I have, not necessarily the circumstances, but the situation. I can choose my perception. I can choose the actions that I take. And it just puts me in a place of self-responsibility and understanding that I always have the power to change whatever it is I want to change in my own life.
Love it. And where can people find you?
Anywhere really, chaseyourfears.com. But I live on Instagram. It's my absolute favorite platform. So you can find me there. It's Dejana_Acosta. And I'm sure you'll write it down because my name is hard to spell.
Yes. Where's the name come from?
Oh my God. That was like before my dad actually spoke English. He was trying to write Diana, but he wrote it with, so basically my name has a Y and an H and two N's and nobody could pronounce it. And everybody was calling me Dajana, which infuriated me. So then once we moved to the US, we're like, okay, now you're pronouncing the H and then people could pronounce my name. So it was actually ignorance on my dad's behalf. And now apparently a lot of people have the name, but they're all younger than I am. So other parents thought it was a good idea.
Dejana?
I don't know why. Yeah.
Huh.
So I thought it was the only one. Then I started Googling the other day, and there's other people all younger. So someone started copying my name out there.
Huh. Yeah, because I was going to say, you're the first one.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so at Dejana underscore Acosta?
Yes.
Okay. So you hang out the most on Instagram. Your site is chaseyourfears.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a podcast too, so you're a fellow podcaster.
I do. And I'm launching a Spanish podcast soon. It's called Emprendedora School.
Nice.
And I'm super excited about it. So that should be launching in about 3 weeks.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Super fun. All right. Well, so the podcast is Chase Your Fears too?
Yeah. Chase Your Fears. Everything Chase Your Fears on the website. If you go to chaseyourfears.com, you can find everything there is to know about me and my business.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your story, for doing amazing things, for teaching us about mindset. I think the listeners are going to really take some gold nuggets that you shared with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I had such a great time.
Awesome. Any final thoughts you want to share?
No, I just hope we stay in touch because I love chatting with you so much.
Yes. No, it was fun for sure. For sure.
Listeners, stay shining.
Awesome.
Whew, listeners, after listening to this interview again before I released it, I was super energized and so excited because the energy of this episode is really good, and I hope you think the same. How many of you feel inspired to change and you're ready to change your mindset? Let me know. Screenshot it, share it on the Instagram, and tag us both. One thing that Dejana didn't share in the episode is her new venture called Emprendedora School, which is a Spanish program for emprendedoras quieren aprender en español. Dejana shares all the amazing things that she shares in her English channels, pero en español, and she brings on different experts, and it's awesome en español. Todo es en español. You can find out more. O pueden encontrar más en emprendedoraschool.com. Listeners, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't done so already. Please share this episode with anyone you think might need to hear this message in the episode. The best way to support the show is to leave us a review. I really, really appreciate it so much when you take the time, because I know it takes time, so I love you for that. You can also support the show on Patreon. And for that, you can head over to patreon.com/cafecompampodcast. Don't forget to follow at Café Con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. You can join the Support Brand Podcast Facebook group. Let me know if you would like me to reactivate the Recovering Procrastinators group on Facebook. I just don't want to spend a lot of time there, but let me know. Listeners, thank you so, so much for hanging out with me today. Thank you for being here. I love you so much. And as always, stay shining.